Look, every podcaster has to make this ask, but it helps us so much when you rate us on any platform you listen to your podcast, Spotify, Google, Apple. You don't understand how much that helps us. Leave a review. I would love to start reading reviews on the show in the beginning show notes, but I haven't gotten any yet. You know, I get star ratings, but nobody leaves a typed up review. And that would just be something awesome for me to start doing as a part of the show. I would also love for you to reach out to me at theweb3gamer@proton.me. That is THEWEB, the number 3, GAMER, at PROTON, period, ME. That's the best way to get a hold of us. Additionally, you can find me on LinkedIn and Twitter. That's where I'm most active. Feel free to shoot me a message on there, tag me in something. Just reach out, you know, don't be a stranger. Additionally, if you really love the show and want to support us in the best sense, we have a Patreon, which you can subscribe to for as little as a dollar just to show your support. $1 a month? I don't think that's too much to ask. And every dollar counts with hosting fees, finding guests, all the upkeep and stuff that I am happy to do. But, you know, it would make me feel great having people support me, for sure. Additionally, if you just want to buy me a cup of tea or coffee or maybe just a nice snack, I will put my Cash App in the show notes for every episode from now on, and you can donate whatever you want. Heck, donate a penny, I'll take it. But, you know, if you give me $3 to $5, it helps me get a nice cup of joe. So, anything's appreciated. Thank you so much. Well, well, well. The Bitcoin halving is upon us. It is both a glorious and a sad day. Glorious because more people are invested in Bitcoin than ever. More people are sharing in its growth. More people are excited and wanting to be a part of the ecosystem. Sad because for the miners, there are less rewards. But with the launch of Runes, there is a massive inflow of money going to the miners. So if you're a miner right now, cue cha-ching cash register noise. Another day to stack sats, everyone. But on this episode of the Web3 Gamer, we talked with Anton Umnov of Helica. Helica is the leading data analytics, marketing, and game management platform for both traditional and Web3 gaming studios. Anton is the co-founder and CEO of Helica. He is a serial entrepreneur and product leader with over 15 years' experience in building and commercializing data and analytics products in fintech, crypto, and tech. Prior to Helica, Anton served as the vice president of data and insights at Drop, a fintech company and analytics lead at Nielsen, one of the largest global analytics firms. Now, for those not familiar with Helica, they've worked with a massive amount of huge companies out there and provided very valuable data. Just to name a few, they've worked with Ubisoft, they've worked with Immutable, they've worked with Yuga Labs, Pudgy Penguins, Animoca Brands, Parallel. I mean, the list goes on, guys. There's an insane amount of great big companies they've worked out there. Their work speaks for themselves. These companies wouldn't continue to work with them and want to have them show them their data analytics if there wasn't bringing real value to their games. And Anton knows everything about analytics. I am a captive listener and know nothing of these things. That's why it was wonderful to have him on and be able to talk so in-depth about all these. So I hope you found this as informative as I did. If you are a Web3 game or a traditional game who's in need of severe data analytics to guide your game, and by severe I mean just like you need everything there, you need quality, you don't want to waste time, you don't want to waste money, after talking with Anton, I am sold on Helica and believe that they will provide and really drive the growth of your game and give you actionable data to utilize. So it was a pleasure talking with Anton. He's welcome back anytime. I really loved hearing about Helica. I love hearing about data and data analytics. As a scientist, I love data, but I will be the first to admit that I am not always the best at understanding the data. My name is Matthew, and this is the Web3 Gamer. now, a message from the ducks. Friends and gamers, my name is Matthew Simone. I'm the Web3 Gamer, and I'm here with Anton Umnov. I should ask you that before I started recording.
Umnov, you got it.
Umnov. All right, cool. Well, how's it going, man?
Good to be here. Just got back from GDC. It was a crazy week. Met all the friends. Met a whole bunch of new people as well. Was shocked, like we chatted before about before this call, how big Web3 presence was this year. It's crazy.
I know. And again, like we were discussing earlier, my fault for not knowing it was going to be this big this year. God, I think about just the amount of people. One, all the people I could have met who I'd already talked to on this podcast. But two, just being able to see all the cool booths like we talked about. I always thought it was all in Southeast Asia. And that's an expensive travel trip for me, even being on the East Coast.
Yeah, plus a lovely 20-hour flight to Singapore from New York, you know.
Right?
You take a sleeping pill, you sleep for 10 hours, all rested, you wake up and you have another 10 hours to go. One of those ones, you know.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so I mean, gosh. Well, I mean, I know we're a little pressed for time, so I'm gonna jump right in, man. Like, what's your background? How did you even get into where you're at now with Helica Gaming?
Yeah, so Helica, it's a relatively new company. So co-founded it about a year and a half ago now, right at the peak of the, I guess, almost at the bear market. We, with the team, we actually raised the first round, started raising on the day when FTX was announced, which was kind of interesting. But then it kind of went up from there in a good way for us. But myself, so I'm coming from data analytics background, so would often start in the industries that are early. Initially, it was fintech. I was doing crypto day trading for many years. And then at some point, I was doing also cannabis analytics. Believe it or not, that industry buys a lot of data as well. And then finally switched to Web3. So it was a bit of a journey.
Well, dang. So your whole background, really, I mean, how does one even, I guess, do you want to run down for people who aren't familiar, like, what does data analytics even look at? Like, what, like, is it anything and everything? It just depends on your user, I guess, or the business you're serving.
Yeah, exactly. So any B2C apps, including games, right? At the end of the day, it's consumer product. You obviously need to understand who your audience is, what are they looking for, which are the games, which are the products they're using, so you can target them, you can create better products, better experiences. And so gaming is no different. Many people think about the games who are outside of this industry as an amazing job from the artwork perspective. Let's build the best graphics. Let's have the best shooting game. But people underestimate how much mathematics and data comes in the back end. And that's what Helica is powering today as well.
So then, yeah, I was going to say, you know, just from if anybody goes on your website and just looks at the amount of partners and people you've worked with, you know, if we just shameless plug just for working with, you know, Yuga Labs, but, you know, it looks like you've done work with Wildcard, Animoca Brands, Ubisoft, Pudgy Penguins, just to name a few of the bigger people out there in Web3. But so it looks like at least Helica revolves around a lot of Web3 gaming. Is that the primary focus? Or are you just kind of like Web3 gaming is a big part of it, but you're focusing on other gaming realms as well?
Yeah, honestly, like initially when I started the company, initially it was all about NFTs, to be honest with you, to start. It was, I guess, late 2022 it was. And then NFTs were at the peak, and obviously the market was booming at the time. I always knew that I wanted to do something in game analytics, and there were a couple of different options, NFTs, games, and financial applications, right? Different DeFi protocols and things like that. Obviously, the first thought was, let's start with finance. I mean, it's kind of where the money is at. But then if you look at the space more closely, it's very, very crowded space. Lots of companies, Nansen already existed for X amount of years. And there was a number of other trading apps that are getting built. And then NFTs was there as well. So that's why it was a default thinking. And gaming in 2022 was not obvious thing at all that we should be focusing on that. It was a relatively niche category relative to the other ones. But what was appealing to gaming for Helica, a couple of different things. That's why we decided to kind of to pivot or to focus on this one more. One is, unlike NFTs, for example, game studios need data on a daily basis because the game is live, people playing all the time. You want to optimize different experiences for the players. And the second thing is, many, like I mentioned, many people don't recognize, but games are highly quantitative industry. And so many PMs, many people and engineers who work in the game studios, they need data to be able to improve the product all the time.
Well, and it's interesting because it's funny how you're like, it wasn't our first choice, but it ended up being like a valid choice. I would argue it's funny when people talk about like not a built industry, like when you can become that niche in the industry, you're like a go-to for so many other, you know, wildfire spreads really quick. And that seems to have been the case for y'all, because realistically, any of these other, any of the other companies I've talked to or studios, a lot of them seem to do their own in-house analytics as far as I've understood. So it's interesting that, you know, my default is to think that that is a lot of work and a lot of power. So like, it makes more sense to have a third party who's like, this is our bread and butter. This is all we do to work with. So it makes total sense to me. And I was surprised before we connected that I had not seen, like, you know, there's a lot of platforms out there where they're like, you know, a lot of people are like, we're trying to be like the Epic Games or the Steam of like Web3 gaming. Like a lot of people, that's a big competitive space right now. But like data analytics, like I don't see like hardly anything in Web3.
Yeah. No, of course. I mean, there are some companies that specialize in analytics across the whole Web3. But to my knowledge, very few companies, I actually don't know any companies that specialize specifically in games. And that's because it's a very complex data problem to solve. On the one hand, you have your on-chain data. On the other hand, many games are built just as a game, and you have a lot of traditional metrics that coming from Web2. You have social media. You have a whole bunch of data sets. And so you actually, we spend the first year building pretty robust backend to be able to aggregate all of the different data sources together to produce any meaningful information, insights that the studios can action on. So I think that was the main reason why we decided to focus on the gaming, because if this is the data problem you can solve, if you can help the games to improve the gameplay, then you can automatically expand to NFTs, DeFi, and all of the other sectors within Web3. So we decided to take kind of the harder route. And then the good thing is the gaming and the whole industry picking up now. Many traditional studios that were experimenting with Web, with Web3, like Ubisoft, one of our customers, they now start to take previous projects that got frozen because of different reasons and market conditions. And now they start launching those games and building it actively. And so all of a sudden, we start to work with many companies that initially were even NFTs, like Yuga Labs, for example. When we started with them, it was mostly NFT projects, as you guys know.
Yeah.
And they had some team changes, and they started building a lot of games. And we're actually seeing the same trend where Pudgies and Azuki and many other NFT projects, they do understand that they would like to gamify experience for their community, for their players, and start moving into the game direction as well. So I think we're in the right spot at the right time.
Yeah, well, and obviously you offer a lot of valuable data to these people, because otherwise, you know, if in the nice way, if the data didn't matter, they didn't find value, why would they keep working with you, right? So, I mean, like, that's a lot of things, like, you know, as much as you can reveal, like, what are some big things that a lot of these companies are looking for? What is their valuable data that they need? Besides obvious things, you know, like, do we have UGC? Do we have user retention? Yeah. What is the revenue, you know, for a user on a daily, weekly, monthly basis?
Yeah. And it's important to know that we initially started with the analytics, with the data, right? So who my community is, what else are they doing? But very quickly, we expanded into user acquisition and attribution. And then now we're doing live ops and A/B testing. So if you think about the way how companies building the games, we actually have a number of we have a couple of different buckets of products that fit into the right stage of the product life cycle of a game, right? So when you think about initially you're trying to design your game economy, you probably want to take a look at competitive analytics to figure out how other games in my genre are performing as well, what's working, what's not, etc. And once you have your alpha test done, then you might want to turn up user acquisition vehicles. And that's where Helica can help. Is Facebook better channel for you than Google? That's how they use the attribution. And once the players are in a game, that's when you start using the live ops and A/B testing tools to take all of these existing features, elements of the game, configs, and start testing it out to figure out how can you serve different experiences for different players in a point of time. So, for example, if you play if you play a shooting game, you might like more, a K-47 versus a grenade for whatever reason. And so right now you actually have ability to vary the gameplay to provide different features and events in the game, depending who the player is. So if you like more K-47, maybe the next rifle you pick up on the ground will be a K-47. For me, it might be different type of ammo, right? And so we can serve this analytics on the back end based on who the player is to offer you more features without ability to code anything new. And in this way, you become more engaged, you potentially spend more money, whatever the metric of the game is as well. So Helica is essentially end-to-end solution. And most of the studios we work with, we start working with them usually about a year, year and a half before the game is actually released on the market. So we don't need to wait until the game is live. And I think this ability to start working with the teams early, way before the product launch, and really partnering up with them, where they view us as an expansion of their team, has been really resonating with all of our customers. Our goal, the last thing I will add on this one, our goal is not to work with 2,000 different studios. There's no 1,000 studios yet, but even if that would be the case, but rather focusing on 30, 50 key partners and going very deep with them. We have gaming analysts, we have PMs that are very hands-on outside of our products. Mm-hmm. And so happy to partner with those companies.
Well, and then two things with that. So it sounds like, first off, like that the data analytics, it can really kind of get as honed in as maybe the studios want, or you can kind of pull it out and make it as broad as they need. It sounds like you really have a lot of variability there. Am I correct in understanding that?
Yeah, no, exactly. It's almost I wouldn't call myself ourselves as a McDonald's menu of items, but yeah. We do have the products that would fit whether the game is established and they're launching a new title. Mm-hmm. Or if somebody is new and is about to expand on building the games. So it's good. Yeah.
Okay. Well, and then for people who may not be aware, can you briefly just like explain like what you mean when you're talking about like live operations and A/B testing?
Yeah. So it's interesting. So we just got back from GDC. We actually started to deploy our first version of AI, different AI products. Analytics is really used to understand the impact that our tools have on improving the gameplay. So for example, you can go into one of our live ops products and you can change various parameters of the game, what kind of experience you serve, how many wins you can have in a row, whatever the case is. Like simple example would be if you play social casino game, we know, Matt, if you lose 5 times, you're likely to quit the game completely. But yeah. What if we allow you to win 1 time and then all of a sudden you play another 20? So mm-hmm. We have all of this information on the back end, and then we can start doing various A/B tests. You can become one part of the players where we can say, hey, what if we let you win another time? How long you will play more? So you become almost like a separate cohort of the players. And then through analytics, you can see the direct impact that this test had on engagement, retention, whatever the metric is, or revenue. And so if this experiment was successful, so then the company, the studio might decide, hey, why don't we expand ability to win or to lose by another 5 times for this set of players, because that's what they're interested in. Or if you're trying to make an in-game asset purchase, maybe asset costs $10 and you have only $9 in your bank account. We have visibility to that. And so why don't we give you all of a sudden discount to $9? And so we still made $9 as a company, as a game studio, or we could have lost $9 completely, right? So it's ability to understand dynamically different parameters of the player, of the players, what kind of gameplay they like, how their spending patterns are looking, which other games do they play, and then adjust various parameters of the game, whether it's rewards, whether it's battle passes, whatever the case is, to that specific player. So you play longer, you spend more money, and then of the day, you have more fun with the game.
No, that's totally fair. Well, and so I guess I wonder too. So you were talking about how sometimes you'll work with these studios like a year, year and a half before the game even launches. So is kind of a way you're collecting and really like sussing out a lot of this data is most people have either they do beta or alpha and they either do internal or external play tests depending on the company and how they want to run the game. Is that where you're getting a lot of that data? Is it in that like play testing range, or how do you, I guess, I'm trying to figure out, how do you know what's going to stick? Because it sounds like you need a user base to really collect the data first before you can organize and understand it and really kind of try this A/B testing or live operations, as you're putting it.
Yeah, totally. I think initially we're actually advising a lot of companies as well what kind of features and parts of the economy that they want to be focusing on. All of our guys are coming from the gaming space. And mm-hmm. So traditional gaming, there's like maybe 20, 30 different features like a battle pass that are known to work, Like it's been done for many years, right? And so Web3, sure, that angle does not really introduce any new elements from the gameplay perspective.
Gotcha.
And so we're actually advising them, hey, let's take a look at two RPG games side by side. And so this type of feature might actually work for you guys. So I would say first couple months, it's usually advisory game economy, how we'll work with them. And then once they launch the alpha test, yeah, could be anywhere from, you know, 20 people to a couple thousand, depending on the gameplay. Mm-hmm. And even though the teams might not have launched the Web3 elements just yet, we already start getting data automatically, even Web2 data, how long people play, what's the ARPU and things like that. And we're able to benchmark it against the industry and key metrics that we're tracking at the same time. So if somebody is playing that game type for an hour long, we have ability to say, is it kind of in a yellow, red, or green zone relative to what they should expect. It's not perfect. And then, of course, when user acquisition comes into play, that's where we can really help to drive UA, measure the funnels, because people spend a lot of money, obviously, on user acquisition, especially in Web3.
Well, yeah. And so, like, could you elaborate more on just kind of how Helica Solutions really empower the companies and the marketers kind of to drive that user acquisition and maximize revenue while lowering that customer acquisition cost?
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, because of the Apple changes, IDFA changes, and things like that, it's very expensive, as you know, to onboard a lot of players in Web3. And most of the projects we're working with, because Web3 community, gaming community is still pretty small, it's critical to convert Web2 users, Web2 players to the Web3 users. Otherwise, the game just will be tiny, right, relatively speaking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so what we're doing today, we're able to measure the effect of marketing campaigns through Helica attribution products. So for example, if you work with several KOLs, or if you run ads on Facebook, or if you target a specific community, we can actually embed an attribution link where you can see how much traffic is coming from specific source, how much traffic is coming from this podcast, how much traffic is coming from Facebook. And you can actually quantify not only how much did it cost you to get it, to get the player to play a game, but because we're tracking analytics of the game at the same time, we track what we call deep funnel attribution. So it's not good enough to know that Facebook was $5 and Google was $4. What's important is how much this player will spend in a game. Maybe Facebook was more expensive, but if the player spends $10 in a game versus $2, you need to look at the ratio between LTV of the player and cost of customer acquisition. And so because we're tracking different channels where studios are spending money on, we can comment on, hey, you know, Facebook was the most cost-effective channel from you from the ROAS perspective, and YouTube, just an example, was the least effective. So then the marketers would reallocate their marketing spend to give more weight on Facebook versus Google just because it's more effective. So gotcha. That's the attribution products. And that effectively not necessarily lowers down your CAC, but increases the ratio between LTV and CAC, so improving the ROI on the marketing spend.
So, and obviously, I totally understand if you're like, people need to pay for this information. I can't give it away on a podcast. But so do you feel like with Web3 gaming, at least, that there's kind of this broad spectrum of LTV across a variety of different areas? Or do you feel like some area, like for me, I personally feel like Twitter is a huge place for Web3 gaming. Like,
yeah.
I feel like I feel like a lot of people who go on there like see a high lifetime value for their customers. And I was just wondering if there's any other ones like that, because people are always talking about, I don't know, Twitter. Honestly, for me, LinkedIn has a lot of people on there, but it also has the opposite end of, I have a lot of traditional gaming people on there who get mad when I post about Web3 gaming because yeah, they're just like, I don't like this stuff. It's they just, you know, they equate it with NFTs and all the boom and all that jazz. But yeah. I'm wondering if there's any like around there that you feel like with Web3 gaming, it's like kind of like Twitter's like the number one, and like it seems to be other people, like maybe YouTube's number two, or like, I don't know, even TikTok, which I mean, maybe banned, so maybe that's not a good example anymore.
No, I was going to say actually TikTok, but the future is uncertain, but TikTok for sure is kind of crushing it on many instances in terms of gaming. Mm-hmm. Twitter is number one for sure, but TikTok is definitely the channel that many people are exploring. And it has been very, very effective. Well, based on you know, a couple of customers that we have at least to attract the gamers. But obviously, in terms of the sentiment and community, it's all about Twitter. Mm-hmm. For the Web3 gamers, right?
Sure.
But I think now many companies are trying to find a hybrid between Web3 audience and just any other player. At the end of the day, if you're building, you know, like Shrapnel, It's a big game, right? Mm-hmm. So you want to have a blend of both people who might be switching away from Halo and Counter-Strike to play Shrapnel, as well as DGen audience as well. So
yeah, no.
Yeah.
No, definitely. Well, and so a lot of your a lot of what you work on is you have a bolstered on-chain analytics from just me browsing on your site and talking with other people on your team. I'm kind of curious, can you explain the significance of what you, or the significance to you of what on-chain analytics for Web3 games are and how Helica is providing actionable insights across multiple blockchains for their users?
Yeah, no, it was pretty complicated for us initially because obviously there are multiple chains.
Yeah,
you got Solana, you got Arbitrum, you got EVMs, non-EVMs, the whole package. And what we found actually in the last year that many of the studios that are building the games, in other words, there is very few games that are built only on chain. Very sure. few right now. It might change, but most of the companies, most of the teams that are building the games, they're coming from Web2 world. And so depending on the market where you're at, for example, if you're in Korea, there are some limitations even to publishing games that have a blockchain elements, right? So most of the teams, what they're doing is to make sure a game could be distributed in the world, they build a game, and then they start adding Web3 elements on top of that, whether it's NFTs, whether it's some kind of rewards based on the token and things like that. So it's almost like you can take a game, you can strip out Web3 element, and it becomes a normal game that would go into the Epic Store or into Steam, et cetera. And so from that angle, I think focusing, that's our differentiation point, focusing on both on-chain analytics, on-chain activity, is as important as on focusing on Web2 metrics, like engagement, how long people play, who they are, and things like that. And the unique sauce comes from combining both of it. Because, you know, sometimes, Matt, you might play a shooting game, and only once in a quarter you might buy something, Web3 asset. Maybe you just play a game. So it's mm-hmm. always a combination. It doesn't mean that you don't believe in Web3 gaming. It just really depends on the gameplay. Some games, like trading card games, obviously they're more natural for the Web3 because it's collectibles by definition. Other yeah. games, I mean, you don't really need it necessarily, depending on the gameplay. So I think from day one, we've always been combining, for example, player segmentation. It's not only about their LTV or how much money they hold in their Web3 wallets. It's combining the total player segments based on their Web2 and Web3 activity, because that's who we are as a player. It's not either or usually, it's a combination. Of course, if the game is fully on-chain, that becomes even more complicated to track the behavior, because if you game like Proof of Play, for example, our customer, amazing game, amazing team, and they build fully on chain. And then if you would like to assess what else are your players doing, what other chains they engage with, it's more complicated because obviously there's multiple chains that we have.
No, that's fair. Well, and that's kind of, you answered kind of what I was getting at, was there's this interesting, in the last two-ish years, this hybrid approach to a lot of these Web3 games where originally I feel like a lot of them were like NFTs are necessary to play the game or a part of playing the game, or you got to like buy our pass, whatever. Now it's become this really hybrid approach where they're like, look, you can play the game. You don't have to do any Web3 stuff if you don't want to, but all the Web3 stuff we've incorporated is only meant to enhance and make the game better and for those interested in it. And so I mean, it sounds like you all have enough data analytics and tools that doesn't hamper you. Like if somebody's like, well, we're kind of in both worlds, you're like, no worries, we can provide you data for both, you know, just depending on the extent of like what you're doing on chain versus off chain. But I was just wondering how that any issues or challenges that brought up, and it sounds like you already have ways to address them.
So some of them, of course, like we're not perfect. We're building as everyone else in the space sure. as well. I think the biggest challenge is not for us, but in generally, how do you connect your wallets, your player profiles to an actual, let's say Twitter handles and things like mm-hmm. that. So people, the studios can talk to their players, can ask what they're looking for. And I think it has been an ongoing challenge on our end. We don't necessarily even focus on this one because it implies that you have to touch on some personal data, PIIs and things like that, which we don't do. But there are some companies in the space that that are focusing on that. But also about NFTs and how different Web3 studios are using Web3 assets. I think what's in a new interesting use case that we're seeing more and more, especially in APAC and Asia, because our business is pretty much 50-50 split between US and in Asia, is ability to own different players, different characters in the game itself, versus just using NFTs as kind of access pass or membership pass, whatever you want to call it, because that was kind of one of NFT usage. And I think once you play a game, or once you own a character in the game, and there's different models there as well, you might get percentage of the, you know, of the revenue, or what kind of payouts you have depending on the place in the leaderboard. That becomes really, really engaging, because imagine you watch a Hollywood movie and you own, I don't know, like Tom Cruise, tokenized version of Tom Cruise. You're going to be watching a lot of movies with Tom Cruise. You know what I mean?
Sure. No, I got you. It's
a mechanism on its own.
Well, yeah, and you're right. And we've seen that in traditional gaming. Like, if you just look at the Fortnite and COD, all their crossovers, like, literally all they have to do is go, here's a Nicki Minaj skin. And people are like, well, I already love Nicki Minaj. And listen, I'm going to buy the skin. Like, I want to play as Nicki Minaj. And you're like, hey, not for me. But clearly, like, somebody did the data and found the analytics there and was like, it's going to sell, guys. Like, don't worry about it. So I totally get what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. And on your previous questions about what kind of dynamics we see in a space, I think it's also like very different worlds in a good way that we see between kind of Europe, US, and what's happening in APAC region. So we recently actually opened office in Korea and in Japan. So we're kind of on the ground there. By the way, it was an interesting exercise for us to get all the products translated into Japanese and Korean to start. So it was, it was interesting. Exercise, but also the players and regulations are so different in those regions that I personally think there's a lot of innovation and cool games coming from APAC, whether it's China/Singapore, whether it's Korea and Japan, because it is less regulated. Well, depending how you look at it, it's less regulated compared to US, or at least there is more certainty what's happening to regulations. And in this way, I find many of the dev teams over there really pushing on new game features. And I think a lot of cool products and games this year in particular will come from Asia. In China, as you know, there are some limitations on the games and in crypto in general. So we're seeing a lot of teams moving at the faster pace to Singapore or to other countries. And obviously, there's a lot of players in China, right? So people really pushing on the boundaries there. And while some projects in US or in Europe might be well known right now because they, you know, raise money earlier, and they spend a lot of money on marketing, I think some of the studios in APAC are very interesting, something to watch for.
No, definitely. Well, and it's funny you bring up Japan, because I have heard and I've met multiple people who have, they open a second or third, or their office is based out of Korea. You know, I always thought Japan would be a huge place for just Web3 gaming with how much tech goes on there. And you're the first person to bring up that somebody's opened an office there. I'm actually very curious to hear if you can talk about that just for even like 5 minutes. Like Web3 in Japan or Web3 gaming in Japan, because I have not, that's something I've looked high and low for, not really been able to find anybody. I mean, to be fair, I don't speak fluent Japanese, so
it's different. I mean, I've been personally, even before Helica, to Japan many times, kind of a bit passionate about the country in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting in Japan, maybe many of the projects are not visible because they actually, it's one of the government mandates over there, of the current government, to actually support the blockchain and Web3 ecosystem, and gaming is part of this as well. And so what we see is in the biggest companies, top five, mm-hmm. all of them have created their separate Web3 divisions. Usually it's a separate joint venture or it's a separate kind of company within the company, if you will. But mm-hmm. all of them are building the games, Web3 games at scale. So Square Enix, Konami, DMM, all of the, and those are, we're talking about billion-dollar companies.
Oh yeah,
and the thing is, it takes sometimes a bit longer to ship out new products in Japan because it's a culture of kind of perfection for the product.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And so I think actually you'll see a lot of games coming this year. But all of the big companies, the one we're dealing with at least, they do have separate product game building teams in Web3. In US, I don't think it's like that as well. Obviously, you know, Zynga's and some of the other companies, they're already having some initiatives in Web3 or Ubisoft in Europe. But in Japan, it's at scale, and partially it's because of it's helped by the government, and crypto mm-hmm. acceptance rate is very high there as well. Startup scene, I think, is there, of course, as well, similar to US, but in US, it's way more robust than in Japan. Japan is all about big conglomerates that are willing to spend a lot of money on IP and Final Fantasy and other things.
Yeah,
it will take them longer, but I think if they ship the product out, it will be one of the big ones.
Okay, no, that's cool to hear. Yeah, because like kind of the extent of like Web3 I had known about in Japan was really just like a lot at the kind of the NFT fiasco for Square Enix. That was about it, and like that. that sucks for them that it didn't work the way they planned, and it you know, it led the way it is. But you know, that kind of made me, I actually had no idea about the government being very supportive of it. That kind of made me think that they had been like, let's explore this avenue, and then when it went really far south, they're like, anyways, and kind of pushed that off to the boat. Because Japanese can be that way sometimes. They're like, we want to try this new thing, but if it doesn't work the way, like a certain way, or it's a big failure, they go, maybe not, and they'll revisit it at a later date. But it's not, yeah. I feel like they're often not like, well, we'll just try again, whereas like I feel exactly. Like Americans fail all the time. They're like, anyways, I'll just try the same thing all over again.
Another kind of fine, you know, on the 11th we'll make it. Yeah. But I think also what's helping out, obviously, market is heating up now. So we saw some projects, to your point, that were shelved before. And now, because conditions are better, whether it's NFT launch, whatever the case is, many of those teams are reviving again, and they're planning to ship out something for this year. And in Korea is a bit different, right? Because Japan is more about conglomerates, those big companies, kind of like EA Sports of the world in Japan. Mm-hmm. Korea is much more balanced. Yes, of course, there's huge companies like WeMade. We work with Com2us in Korea. But also startup scene, people who build from zero to one is very, very robust there. I think in Korea, many people studied in US, and startup scene is very similar to US as well. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's the second market that we're excited about in Helica in Asia.
Yeah. And I mean, gosh, like I feel like there were so many, I feel like Korea was like one of the first. Korea and Singapore were like two of the first to pop up with a lot of the Web3 games. Like they were just coming out of the woodwork left and right. So, and again, with all the events going on in Southeast Asia, I'm like, it's clearly doing very well for them over there.
Yeah, like and Dubai is a bit still kind of black box for me. I don't know if you had a chance to chat with many teams there. I think Dubai historically in Web3 at least was kind of like metaverse space.
Yeah, that's pretty much my same. It's like weird. It's like people will say they're working in or out of Dubai, but then when I talk to them, they're like, oh, I don't live in Dubai. I'm just like, wait, what? Like, so it's always really weird. It's like people are like, no, I'm just working on this thing in Dubai. But you're right. It's always very metaversey. You know, it kind of fits with the whole very luxury of Dubai, you know, that's always been my interpretation. But yeah, you're right. It's still a lot of unknowns. I don't really know where they're trying to go outside of that so far.
Yeah, I'm going to go to Token 49 in the next couple of weeks. So that's interesting. That we'll definitely see game studios versus metaverse companies really growing there. And Saudi Arabia is actually pretty close there. And it's a big hub for the games. Like esports is like massive there.
Yes.
So people building like stadiums double size of the Yankees just for kind of like esports tournaments. When I saw it for the first time, I was like, oh, geez, you know, next level.
Right. Yeah, no. And again, they Saudi Arabia, Dubai, like they just go really big. Like there's.
Yeah.
They're always coming out with some crazy project that everybody's like, there's no way it'll happen. And then like, we forget about it. And then 15, 20 years later, like, anyways, we just finished that project. Everybody's like, I can't believe you actually did that. Like,
yeah.
Props to them for always thinking that way.
Yeah. And so for Helica, it was always for us the same, which is I live in Canada. We kind of equally split with the team between Canada and US. Mm-hmm. Toronto and Austin are the big hubs for us. So mm-hmm. when we launched Helica initially, for us, it was about testing the market, Web3 market in the biggest market, which is US. Mm-hmm. Let's find the product market fit. And then after that, we slowly expanded to Europe, like France. We got a couple people from France in gaming on our team. And France is definitely a big hotspot for the games. I mean, of course, Ubisoft is there, but also engineering-wise, very strong team. And now the goal for us for this year is to expand into Asia. Now that we found product market fit in US.
No, that's awesome. Well, and on that note, is there, you know, maybe there's, we don't have any yet for those places you've recently expanded, but is there any success stories you can share where Helica's insights directly contributed to a studio's growth, engagement, retention, or revenue?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, Yuga Labs, as an example, was one of our first customers. And so we work closely with the team. I can send you a couple links later. I think it was VentureBeat to launch and to adjust Dookie Dash, which was one of their, I guess, first or second games. I can remember in this moment. So it was close collaborations between Helica and Yuga team, Spencer, who is running the gaming on the Yuga front. Mm-hmm. And if you, I don't know if you played Dookie Dash, but it seems like a trivial game from the gameplay perspective. But it's actually a fairly complex engagement and game from the mathematical angle, engineering angle on the back end.
Okay.
We've seen some crazy retention numbers. It was, I think it was about a year ago, it was released, the first version. It was like the highest that we've seen for sure, at least in Helica. Mm-hmm. So we work a lot with the teams to ship out the games and to optimize it as well. So that was good. And then, well, there's a number of games that are coming live now. So we'll work with like Wildcard. I'm a big fan of Paul there. Actually, the first game that he built, Age of Empires, was like the first game I was like obsessed with.
That's how I found out about him. I was like, oh, Paul Bettner, part of Age of Empires. I was like, anyways, I'm working on this Web3 game Wildcard. I was like, no, I'm still trying to get Paul on the podcast. I bug him all the time.
he's a great guy. Yeah. And so there's a number of different examples. But I think before the game goes live, we'll focus a lot with the teams on optimizing the alpha and beta test, because there's no point to spend, you know, $1 million, whatever the number is, on user acquisition before the game is optimized as well. Otherwise, it becomes a leaky bucket. But most of our customers start to ship out the games at scale and run user acquisition sometime this summer in the fall. And so you'll see a lot of great products on the market. Get ready. The summer will be busy. Forget about traveling.
I know, right? Well, and so what to you, I guess at Helica Gaming, like, what does that look like? Like, what is a sign of user acquisition for y'all? Other than obviously like being able to track the data analytics and go, we had 10,000 players today, and they're the last 7 days. Like, we didn't lose them, drop off, or didn't go significantly.
Yeah, honestly, like, there's always like drop off, right? I mean, after, like, if it's a casual game, you're not gonna play it more than, I don't know about you, but like a couple weeks maybe maximum. So there always will be drop off, but we're tracking it. It has to be in line with the benchmarks. So if like day 30 retention is over 50%, that's kind of amazing depending on the game type. And mm-hmm. so for us, what we're really focusing at Helica is that the game have enough players on an ongoing basis, so then we can actually use our core tools like live ops tooling to start optimizing the game, so the games become more profitable. If there's only 2,000 people playing and they play for a couple of days and then drop off, we kind of cannot really do our job, just because nobody can use our live ops tooling and A/B testing because there's no players. So I think a year ago, most of the teams were concerned with like user acquisition was like number one on the table. That's why you see a lot of startups, launch platforms and things like that. How do you convert Web2 players to Web3? Right now, I think this problem is, I wouldn't call it solved, but it's definitely in a better spot than a year ago. And right now, the mindset of the devs is switching from, can I actually launch a game and if somebody going to be interested in it, to how can I make the game more sustainable? How do I make sure that it becomes monopoly, like game monopoly, and not kind of one-off game, one-off success? And so that's what we're focusing on.
No, sure. So then, you know, you have like, you know better than anyone, there's vast amounts of data available that you could probably give to your clients. And so how does Helica ensure that the insights provided are both actionable and reliable for its clients based on the data you provide for them?
For us, metrics are very simple. Like, honestly, there's various KPIs that studios look at to assess the effectiveness of our tools. One is all the users that we attract to the games, how their retention is looking on day 7, 14, and 30. Like, how many people actually sticking in? Are we driving the right traffic? Are we driving the right cohorts in a game? Because if you off, for example, because you can always buy players, right? You can go on Facebook ad, you can target specific, there's no issue.
Sure, yeah.
When people say there's problems with user acquisition, it's not really the case. It's like, can you attract the right segment of people to your game?
Yeah, completely.
So that's one KPI. And for us, it's very quantitative. If retention is versus the benchmark, we've done our job. And then on the second part, it's very easy for our customers to assess us as well, because our metric, when you use live ops tooling, there's only one metric for success. If the LTV of the player initially was $1, by how much Helica was able to increase LTV of the customer from the baseline, right? So if we're able to increase average player spend, you know, from $5 to $10, this $5 is incremental value that we brought to the game studio. And as long as they spend less than $5 with us, it's kind of no brainer for them, because it's positive ROI.
Yeah.
So for us, it's actually a fairly quantitative type of business, which just kind of makes it a bit challenging and hard, but fun at the same time, because it's easy. And of course, you know, we were, as a team, we were not perfect all the time as well. Some things, quite frankly, did not work out. But we are the builders, as everyone else in Web3. And so we have this idea of like weekly sprints. We actually ship out features of a product very frequently, and we'd rather get the feedback from the market early from our customers. It's like, oh no, it's completely off. Oh no, it's amazing. Before building something for a year and then having this kind of magic reveal party, and then finding out that it's not the right fit, for example, or vice versa. So we're very agile and iterative team, and I think that's why most of the game studios are building, because we don't really know all the problems that are ahead of us. And so this ability to partner with our team, it's not like a SaaS product. You just go in a dashboard and you have 1-800 number if login doesn't work. Like, it's a very hands-on experience for our customers.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing I would say on this one is we're very tied to the success of our partners, right? So the way our revenue model works is we would charge the most amount of money, whether it's in cash, whether it's the token, whatever the case is, when the game is built, successful, and thriving. And we really charge very little upfront. So we incentivize to make sure that the games that we're helping with, they will be very successful, because that's when we, as a company, make the most money, selfishly.
Sure.
But it's a win-win kind of collaboration.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen anybody mad when their company or product is doing really well. They're like, I have to pay more for
this. Yeah.
exactly. You know? So that sliding scale of revenue, I've never not seen somebody be upset about it, unless they think they hold all the keys and they're like, well, I don't need you. I can do it on myself. And you're like,
yeah.
Good luck.
And the AI product that we're shipping out, because it will take everything that I was mentioning we're doing on live ops and A/B testing, and mm-hmm. it start to do it slowly programmatically. And revenue model there even better, I think, for the customers and selfishly for ourselves, because what we're saying is the ML models that we are shipping to the market now, applicable to both, by the way, traditional game studios and Web3, we don't charge the customers anything. We only charge for the incremental revenue that Helica brings to the table. Let's say right now, studio is making $1,000 a day. If Helica ML model help you to improve the game through various ways from 1,000 to 5, this 4,000 incremental revenue that we brought to the table, we're asking for the revenue split between ourselves and the partner. And for the partners, it's no brainer. There's no risk. Because if it doesn't work, you can fire us.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
But, right, yeah. And they're like, we're still making $1,000 a day without you, so we'll be okay either way.
Yeah.
You know, if they're learning, if they can survive or build their company on that.
Yeah, and we're doing it because we're pretty confident in the models that we're building, because we have a lot of information, and models are based on those data sets. And it also allows us to partner up with the companies over the long term, because again, we're not trying to onboard 1,000 different studios. We're trying to work with 50 best teams in Web3.
Yeah, no. And so that all makes come, that's all very insightful and very, I appreciate that. It sounds like you're providing like this dedicated analytic support for all your clients, and how it's like this very personalized approach. And this is really how, since you're personally involved in the project, it's really a big way that these game studios benefit from any of the strategies you all implement or provide to them, or, you know, say maybe that benefit from. But, you know, you focus on actionable insights. And so, you know, in the fast-paced gaming industry, how do you ensure that your recommendations remain relevant and effective?
Yeah. So for us, it used to be, because I'm, you know, myself spend a lot of time in the insights industry, it used to be that people produce PowerPoint report, here's a recommendation. In our case, because we're really working with the configs of the game, so we're going into the meat of the game per se, and there's different features, different elements that you can modify without getting engineer involved, we're mm-hmm. literally able to take different features of the game, different events, we can shuffle it around, and we can see what impact the shuffling has on the player engagement, retention, or revenue. And so then AI machine essentially automatically recommends the best combinations that work for you, right? So again, like if you're playing social casino game, let's take a look at the combination, how many times you allow to lose before you walk away. Is it 4, 5, 7, 20? Then you add another variable. What kind of player you are? Where do you live? What are you interested in? So you take all of those combinations, and then you can actually figure out the optimum number of times when you can lose so that you stay or you leave the game. Maybe it's 7 times. After 7 times you leave, you will never open us again. So why don't we expand from 7 to 8 if that's the threshold? So it's automatically optimized. So to answer your question, how we're doing it in real time, because it's basically a machine on the back end that is calculating it all the time. It's not like what we used to do in day one at Helica and previous companies I was running, where it was literally analysts looking at the dashboards, you know, what should we do better, right? So it's not like Deloitte research reports. I mean, love Deloitte, but nothing against Deloitte, but you know what I mean? So yeah. more it's getting automated. And because games are so dynamic and so live, that's the only way to do that. And there's so many information as well in place. And also, I think many developers, they forget that, I mean, there's only so many players in a space and people have $100 to spend, you know, a month on a game, whatever the number is. People forget that it's a finite pool of people and people have so much disposable income. It's not like unlimited number of, right? I think more and more game studios start to take a look at what else their players are doing, which other games do they play. If it's trading card game, are you choosing between, you have only, you know, 5 hours a day to play. Mm-hmm. So I think ability to understand not only how to improve your game, but what's happening outside of your four walls, what other companies are doing and how your customers, how your players are spending time is very valuable to them. And we provide this industry-wide benchmarking and an ability to understand the wallet flow and consumer flow across different games.
Sure. Well, and so on that note, like looking to the future, like how do you see Helica evolving and like what are the trends in gaming analytics that you're excited to tackle that you feel like maybe there's not as great a way to tackle them right now, or maybe just unknowns that you're like, we have no idea how to tackle this right now, but I think we will in a couple of years.
Yeah, like so the big problem we're trying to solve for, obviously there was a big wave and it's only starting of generative AI and an impact on the artwork, on the game development. We see it firsthand where when we started Helica 2 years ago, it took you minimum a year, let's call it 6 months to a year to build and ship out the game, like minimum. Right now, and initially lots of time was spent on the graphics, artwork, and things like that. Mm-hmm. In the last, I would say like half a year, we're seeing all the time that indie studios, I have a friend who built a game over the weekend using some of the tools that are in place, and he's not a gamer. Right, like so we're seeing the trend where many of the big studios and smaller ones, they can ship out the product very, very quickly. And now what they're lacking is this analytical mathematical backbone that can able to sustain with the same pace as games are getting shipped out. And that's where Helica comes into the place, and that's why we're pushing so much our AI product so they can get caught up with the generative AI and ability for the games, for the studios to ship games faster. One example, you know, like bigger studios, they have separate teams for each title that they have, right? You have PM, you have analyst for every single game. So if all of a sudden you're shipping out not one game, but 10 games a year, like you're not going to be hiring 10 different teams. You just don't have money for that. So they actually need the tools like ourselves that are programmatic, that are using ML models to be able to spread their teams across multiple games. And we almost become this kind of PM assistant, whatever there are. I need to talk to our marketers to figure out the right wording, but almost like PM copilot, if you will, that helps you manage the games automatically. And so that's what we're excited about this year.
Okay. No, that sounds very fascinating. Very looking forward to that. Well, I only have two more questions for you, and they're both kind of fun, open-ended questions. But I wanted to ask or make sure, you know, since we have limited time, was there anything we missed with Helica that you were just burning to talk about?
No, I think it's exciting. I think I just want to highlight that we kicked it off in Canada and US. I think super bullish on the APAC market and some of the other areas of the world where teams are shipping very strong products. And honestly, super happy that we finished 2023. For us, it was successful, but I know many of our colleagues and friends struggled in different ways. It was a brutal market. Now it's finally, I don't really watch like the prices of Bitcoins. I do, of course, but not like on an hourly basis, but it's nice to see we in a green zone again.
Yeah, it's very nice.
So that's exciting. And honestly, if you see in other conferences, it was sentiment have shifted. And honestly, I think it happened in the last 90 days maximum. So happy we're in this ride right now.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. I'm here for it, man. I mean, I started this podcast in the bear market, so I'm very glad to see things take a massive upturn.
People smiling now, yeah.
Right? Well, and so I guess my two simple questions is one, like, you know, and it's okay if you're not, but do you consider yourself a gamer?
Honestly, I used to be a semi-pro in Counter-Strike, not a pro, semi-pro. The first my ex-girlfriend and I started dating, we actually met in the LAN club. I don't know if you...
Oh, yeah. No, I know.
Yeah. So kind of the dating scene.
Mm-hmm.
I would always kind of mid-core guy plus. So strategy, Age of Empires, CS, less so casual, but lately less. But Web3, I'm excited what kind of products coming to market this year so I can finally try some of the new games on the market.
Yeah, definitely. If you're an Age of Empires fan, I can always recommend The Last Monarchy. They're still in beta, but they're looking to be the Age of Empires of Web3. So I've been looking forward to it.
Yeah, check it out. Awesome.
Well, and then the last question I have for you is like, you know, what advice would you give to younger folks wanting to get into Web3 or they want to start a Web3 project?
Honestly, like for us, for Helica team, the path was not clear at the very beginning. So there was a number of pivots. I think ability to start building. So when the market is rough, like last summer, like you don't want to do it, like, you know what I mean, but I think this is when you need to triple down on the speed, because at the end of the day the market will recover, and just remember that it's very cyclical. And also I would say we've been very fortunate, but I think ability to select the right VC partners from the early day, people who are founder friendly, people who support you, people who understand it will be a cyclical journey, is also very key, because, you know, those guys will advise you and give you some tips. But I think selecting the right VC partners and get very optimistic about the market, because it will be up and down all the time.
Yeah, once you've been in one bull run and one bear market, you've seen it. Everybody feels very smart in the bull market, and everybody feels very dumb in the bear market.
On Twitter every morning, top 10 coins to choose from.
right, yeah. I mean, you can always Google, you're like, what's the next crypto to buy? And there's always people being like, these are the ones to buy, come on.
I caught myself I remember the previous, or the first, I guess, ICO run, when was it, 18, 19? It's just funny, I remember initially buying different coins and losing money and winning some. And at the time, it was just like the names.
Yeah.
Funny thing is that many of those companies actually like real huge businesses now. Many of them don't exist, but it's just funny. Before it was like, what kind of coin you select? Right now it's a huge like tech companies essentially that are building it. So it's amazing to see the evolution of the space.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. It's funny. Well, I want to be mindful of your time, Anton. I really appreciate you coming in, talking about Helica. Really love hearing about it. I will make it to GDC next year and hopefully we can meet up there. But obviously in the meantime, you know, take care of yourself. Take care of everything at Helica. Looking forward to everything y'all continue to do there, man.
Thank you. Thanks for the invite, Matt. Excited to be here.
Well, friends, that's another episode down. If you enjoyed this podcast, we would really appreciate you rating it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you can rate and wherever you listen to and get your podcast. It would mean the world to us and help get this podcast to people who truly are involved in Web3 gaming, blockchain, and cryptocurrency, and want to learn more and stay on top of these emerging technologies. If you have any queries, want to reach out about any collaborations or advertisements, as well as want to reach out with any improvements you think we could make on the podcast, please email us at theweb3gamer@proton.me. We would love to hear from you and take every response very seriously. Take care and keep gaming, my friends.